Our next item, number 3, is open public input. Looks like we have some people who want to speak with us. Thank you.
8.
Okay. I think many of you have signed up, have been here before. But I always go through reminding everyone of what our commission rules are. We provide everyone who wants to testify with 3 minutes. So we'd like you to come up to the front table, sit in front of the microphone. Don't speak too closely to the mic, but provide us your testimony. And if you would, listen for the beeping noise. That means your time is up, and we'd like you to wrap up your remarks. If you don't, I'll politely interrupt you. Okay, so the first person who signed up is Al Schmader, to come forward. Yes, we've got your hand out.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Commissioners, my name is Al Schmader. I'm representing the Chambers Creek Restoration Team. This is your monthly report on Chambers Creek. Seems like it. Last month, volunteers rebuilt a fish ladder at the Chambers Dam, which had been inoperable for about 30 years. With the help of a biologist in the Puyallup tribe, a firefighter from the city of University Place, a coach from Steilacoom High School, a retired 3-star general Air Force, a maintenance supervisor, and a CPA, we got the work done. We had a lot of fun doing it. Now the ladder is ready for fish. But we got one little more hurdle to overcome, an internal ladder, an internal hump. Who's going to open the steel plate that allows water to flow to the fish ladder? Now, you look on that handout, that lower picture there, there's a 800-pound steel plate probably that sticks in there. That prevents water from reaching the fish ladder. The maintenance folks in the Department of Fish and Wildlife indicated they have agency work to accomplish. And apparently we have a low priority for this because it's not considered agency work, I guess. So our request today is that the we'd like you to direct the department to either designate the project as agency work with a high priority, or allow us volunteers to remove the plate at no cost to the department. One or the other. Thanks.
Fairly simple request.
So.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What stock of fish, variety of fish, Chinook, cole, chum?
Right now, the Chinook are being trapped, so we will have a close for the Chinook run. But the coho and chum are our main, and then hopefully some steelhead. This was a mother lode stream for steelhead for the South Sound years ago. So the intent here is to reduce the predation by seals. There's only one ladder that works, and the little seal sits right there and has lunch, breakfast, and supper. And we said, now let's make it a little tougher on them, have two fish ladders. Any more questions?
Any other questions? I think we'll be able to get right back to you.
Thanks.
Okay, Brian Walter, you're up next.
Hi there. So my name is Brian Walter. I live in Southwest Washington, and I'm a crazy fisherman. I fish between 50 and 75 days a year on the Columbia River system. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders and our thousands of members in Washington and Oregon. I've been volunteering with the Steelheaders for quite a few years now, and I'm now the Washington State Governor Affairs Director. I'd like to tell you a little bit of a story to start. Over the last 3 weeks, I spent fishing the Buoy 10 Chinook season, down Ilwaco, Astoria. Crazy good fishing, by the way. You should all try it if you haven't. This season, we fished quite a lot. I had an opportunity to share seats on boats with about 30 individuals from many different walks of life, some friends, family, acquaintances, fellow supporters of fisheries. Myself and thousands of others spent remarkable sums to enjoy this world-class fishery. My family and I likely spent more than $1,000 in boat fuel, $2,500 in lodging, 500 in restaurants, 300 in bait, tackle, and ice, and more than $100 in boat launch fees. All told, we likely spent more than $4,000 on just this season. For 3 weeks, it was a story of long lines at every restaurant, not an empty hotel room for miles. Fishermen were everywhere you turn. It was crazy. I left the coast yesterday, September 4th, the day after Chinook season closed. Overnight, Astoria, Owako, and Chinook became ghost towns. As I drove home yesterday across the Rainier Longview Bridge, thousands of fishing boats were visible up and down the Columbia. See, the fleet moves. As I drove up this morning from Kalama, there was hundreds and hundreds of boat trailers visible from I-5. The fleet just follows the run up the river as the season progresses. It's just crazy economic excitement. It's fantastic. Recreational fisheries are clearly an economic powerhouse. In June, I sat before you here to ask the commission to establish a recreational priority for Columbia River fisheries. Since then, Oregon Governor Kitzhaber has set forth a directive to the Oregon Commission to do just that. We believe the governor's plan is an outstanding solution that protects wild fish, increases sport fishing opportunity, while at the same time improves commercial fishing interests. If you implement the governor's directive in full, it will be a huge win for wild salmon conservation, sport fishing, and a future for commercial fishing, and not to mention the benefit to the Northwest economy. I'm here to voice our organization's full support for Governor Kitzhaber's directive and ask the Washington Commission to embrace this vision fully and let you know that we will support you in these efforts and will help you in every way we can to achieve this goal. As you move forward with the rulemaking process, we'd like to thank you and encourage you to proceed with what clearly is the right thing for the Columbia River. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay. Jana Nichols.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, and Director for allowing me to speak and provide input into possible changes to the current sport fishing regulations. My name is Jenna Nichols. I live in Vancouver, Washington, and I have been one of those crazy scuba divers that dives in cold water. I've been doing it since 1999. I am currently employed by Reef Environmental Education Foundation as their outreach coordinator. And part of that job is that I train volunteers to conduct fish and invertebrate surveys on their dives in Washington State and elsewhere. And I encourage them to do ongoing surveys. I say that for background information. I am not here as a representative of Reef today. I am only here representing myself. And so that is the direction I will go. I'd like to talk to you today about three things. First is the decline of rockfish species, populations of rockfish species in Nia Bay. Second is the decline of other fish species in that area as well. And third is about the regulations for cabazon in both Nia Bay and Puget Sound areas. I began doing volunteer work, surveys for Reef back in 2001 and have personally conducted over 516 surveys. Those are one survey per dive. Each dive takes about 45 minutes to an hour. So that's a lot of survey work that's been done. In Washington, there have been over 11,000 like surveys like mine conducted by volunteers since 1998. And those are done by over 1,800 Reef members. Experienced and skilled Reef members are invited to be on the Reef Advanced Assessment Team. For the past 10 years, members of that skilled team have been convening in Nia Bay for a week-long annual survey of selected sites within the Olympic Coast National Marine Sanctuary. So that would be Area 4B. And we just finished up our 10th annual survey a couple of weeks ago there, and I've got the data processed and wanted to share some of that with you. These surveys are conducted in August of each year, so we're doing it at the same time each year. We have anywhere between 6 and maybe 12, but on average 8 to 10 divers that participate in this survey that takes place for 4 to 5 days each year. And we accumulate a number of surveys, which you can see on page 2 of your handout in orange. It shows our survey effort annually. The sites are quite consistent. The map on the last page shows you what sites we have visited over the past 10 years. Oh, great. Okay, so I've created the summary of the findings. You have them there. My first concern is for rockfish. You will look at those. You have to look at both sighting frequency and density. Also, if you can look at the cabazon and especially striped perch, you'll see there that that is a decline. And thirdly, cabazon in this particular area, as well as Puget Sound, are found in fewer numbers than lingcod, yet the lingcod regulations are much allow for less than the cabazon. The cabazon is less restrictive than the lingcod are. So if you could look at those, I would totally appreciate it. These charts should be showing increases as we try to rebuild our rockfish stocks and not declines. So thank you very much for the time. Are there any questions? You're all silent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jack Field?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Storr. For the record, Jack Field, Executive Vice President of the Washington Cattlemen's Association, and you can all guess what I'm here to visit with you about. So I'll go quick because there's a lot to fit in 3 minutes. While the Washington Cattlemen's Association certainly doesn't support the Wolf Plan, we do appreciate the opportunities we've had recently to work with department staff on a variety of issues, which many of those you had an opportunity to talk about today, which unfortunately we voiced concerns on through the scoping process. We're hoping that we'll be able to get these addressed to give the department the clear authority necessary to do the job that is at hand, which is management. We have been able to work with Mr. Ware on a variety of issues, and we'll be doing that on the proposed WACs and a few other possibilities pertaining to compensation and other conflict measures to hopefully provide some additional input. Would like to really echo and give kudos to the department for standing up and really being firm on issuing that initial kill order. Can't stress enough how important it is, in our opinion, to remove the wedge pack, not just up to 4 wolves. Anything short of a pack removal, as you've seen from the depredations today and from neighboring ranches, I think is going to be viewed by the livestock community as less than successful. Would also like to talk a little bit about the landowner agreements. We've been working to try to encourage as many producers as possible to come forward and work with the department on those agreements. And again, Mr. Ware's been very good. We've arranged a variety of conference calls and sit-down meetings with producers throughout the state to try to explain what tools might be available and how we can try to work through these issues. As you've heard just this morning and this afternoon in your briefing in regards to some of the losses, the $50,000 we have for compensation will come nowhere near covering these losses. And just in visiting with the producers there in Stevens County, they have been doing absolutely everything humanly possible to try to mitigate impacts with their livestock. And it's very important that the Commission understand that everything that they're doing is costing them money every day, delaying turnouts, pulling cattle off of pastures, moving things, extremely expensive activities and things that hopefully don't go unnoticed. We would also like to be sure that as you take a look at the language, I would highly recommend getting something in tandem. It needs to be easier for the director to be able to make the decision, and I know this isn't something that he flips a coin. This is something that takes a lot of diligent effort on all sides, and we need to have this as easy for the department and the staff to be able to make a field-level decision on what they need to do, because at the end of the day, when those decisions happen quickly, it's much easier to continue to build trust, and if we have trust from the stakeholders in the department, we're able to move forward. So I would appreciate your efforts on this, and whatever we can do, we need to keep working on it.
Okay. Well, before you leave, Jack, I have to tell you, I really appreciate you coming here and talking with us, number one, because I know you didn't like our plan. And I know that your constituents are feeling the pain more than anyone right now. So I guess my I wanted to thank you, number one, but also ask you if there's anything that we can do to improve the relationship between our department and the Cattlemen's Association, the livestock operators. We know that there's been a degree of tension, friction recently because of all the depredations. We're right in the middle of this now. We knew it was going to eventually cause friction. So is there anything that you think we can do to get on a better plane?
Well, we're working very diligently on that one thing, because at the end of the day, we've got, and I agree wholeheartedly, we're trying to get as much support as possible, and Dave and Steve have done a great job in bringing the agreements forward, trying to lay out some of the opportunities and different possibilities that are there. I've had a variety of producers that are in other areas, not simply Stevens County, but other parts of the state that have had sightings and are asking, can we get an agreement? We'd like to work with the department, but they're not certain. The one thing that I get over and over from people is that, well, I don't have dead cattle today. I don't want to take an agreement from somebody that's right in the heart of the activity. And there's been a fair number of producers that would be willing to get an agreement, work with the department, which I think is essential, so we can start to get a network and demonstrate that when you partner with the department, it isn't a bad thing. You've got the ability to work together, broaden the base, increase the exchange of information, and I'm hoping we have an opportunity to maybe look at agreements in some of the other areas, Blue Mountain region. We're working with a producer in the Tianaway area on an agreement. I know Dave's working along with Steve Pizengra on the west side of the wedge with the producer on a possible agreement. But I think if we can get some more agreements out there, the critical thing right now is the ability to manage effectively the wedge pack. And then the other important thing that we cannot forget, and we're going to find out very quickly, is what impacts we're going to have on our ungulates when our sportsmen are out there trying to enjoy the opportunities. Just anecdotally, what I'm hearing in that area doesn't sound too rosy for the early part of the hunting season, and that's, at the end of the day, that's where the dollars and cents come in for the department. The livestock industry is going to face hemorrhaging losses, but if we work together, I think we've got some ways to get there. I hope we've got quality surveys on the ground so we know where we started with our ungulates, because we can't afford to have the sportsmen take the same hits that the livestock producers are, because that will mean the ticket sales in terms of everything down the line from sporting goods and, most importantly, hunting licenses are going to evaporate.
Okay. Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Jack, I too thank you for coming. I know the frustrations of Stevens County cattlemen is really can't be described. I too, I guess, coming from non-government kind of work, the pace of that we run is fast, but it's never quick enough for the cattle guys, and we're catching up. We're putting everything in place much faster than normal. So if you could kind of pass on the word that we're with them, we just need a little more patience and see if we can get there. But this thing is exploding, and probably going to get significantly worse in the next 60 days. So we're going to need a lot of help, I think, to get through the next period. So tell them we're with them. We just got to take our time and do it the right way.
The difficult thing right now is, and basically right now through Thanksgiving, producers are going to be gathering. They're bringing cattle off. This is going to be an extremely difficult time. And as depredations continue, the tensions are going to spike. When you start to take a look, operating lines are going to be coming due. You're looking at having to buy hay that's $200 plus a ton. And if somebody's coming in 4, 5, 6, 7, who knows how many calves short, it's... there isn't a bottomless pit of profit. There isn't 20% to 30% of profit in an animal, and that's something that I hope the commission understands. Yes, we're talking about near record high prices on, in terms of what cattle are worth today, but we're also looking at near record high prices on inputs. It's very difficult, and unfortunately, it's. Unless we're able to effectively manage these, this wolf plan will break livestock producers. There is no question about it. We're seeing that, unfortunately, in Stevens County. We're going to do everything we can to work with the department because the only way we can improve it is by working together.
Thanks. Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, thank you for coming, Jack, and sharing your views with us. I think I understand what impact it's having on the cattle. I think your comments are right on. I also wanted to thank you for putting information in your newsletter on how to report sightings of wolves, and I think that we still aren't there yet. I talked to a lot of people that have made sightings but not reported, and I don't think there's as much confidence in the department as there could be, but I would appreciate or suggest, I guess, that you continue to suggest to people that they report sightings, because that's going to drive the management program to a large extent, and we need those observations.
And I, again, hats off to the department for your work in Stevens County. The single database is a huge step forward. And Dave's been great in terms of getting information to me, to producers that have questions about wolves and anything we can do to get information out there. I'd rather it's coming directly from the source rather than second or third hand that might not be accurate at all. So thank you. I know I'm over on time.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Kent Martin, you're next.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Kent Martin, and I've been a lifelong commercial fisherman on the Columbia River, Willapa Bay in Alaska. A couple of thoughts I want to share with you with regard to the approaching bi-state process proposed in the Kitzhaber letter. Of course, the central focus for harvest with regard to hatchery reform was to develop methods to increase the harvest on abundant hatchery populations without increasing the incidental level of harvest on certain listed stocks. Failing that, hatchery production was to be downsized accordingly. Most of our fishermen are puzzled and rather cynical. The states, after having spent about $10 million of federal money to identify, develop, and test alternative gears, are now contemplating select area fisheries, just as the alternative gears are showing some remarkable potential. Currently, the select area fisheries on the Oregon Bank of the Lower Columbia cost federal, state, and local funders about $4.1 million annually. To expand the projects, as the governor's letter suggests, even if it is biologically doable, would likely cost the entire equivalent of the selective harvest development of $10 million every year. We doubt that kind of funding is remotely obtainable or sustainable. What I quite frankly see is a looming fisheries train wreck. An untenable situation where public and private entities are not going to continue to raise fish and provide the water and habitat where it counts most for Lower Columbia and coastal fishermen who are not allowed to catch those fish and recreational fishermen who can't begin to catch them. With the findings of the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, which in effect says, catch those fish or lose them, and its acceptance by National Marine Fisheries in its draft EIS for the Columbia River Hatchery System, the business and industrial sector now has the scientific rationale to advocate for major hatchery reductions even unto the Snake River. Finally, as a process matter, our fishermen are currently involved with the Oregon ballot measure, still fishing the Columbia coast, Puget Sound, and even a few in Alaska. These issues are much too complex to rush through this process in 3 months. We're not going to be able to be involved as meaningful stakeholders until after this election. I guess my only other thought was on that draft EIS that NIMS came up with. It's in for revision now. The cuts for Snake River Fault Chinook releases were to go from 4 million down to 800,000, which is effectively a broodstock. I think you're going to have trouble arguing that you should maintain hatchery production on the main stem Columbia and the middle Columbia on upriver bites when there is this year, as in most years, a very large natural spawning surplus on the order of 100,000 fish this year. I think it'd be very hard to argue, well, you've got to keep producing the nymphs, these hatchery fish, when you can, nymphs can basically say, you got more than you can catch right now. So all I'm saying is that I think we need to look at all options. I'm not necessarily opposed to this, but we need to look, I think, at all options, and that includes main stem fisheries with some of the alternative technologies, possibly. But they're not going to work for 30 or 40 fish a day. These are volume operations with four or five guys. They're very capital and labor intensive.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, thank you. Brian Oren? Brian?
Yeah, pass.
You pass. Okay. Dan Cothran?
Madam Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Dan Cothran. I'm a Waukegan County Commissioner. I'd like to say, and also I'm here to represent Clatsop Pacific and Columbia Counties, also the coalition there. And we're opposed to Ballot 81. And we're here to basically back the commercial fishing industry. I mean, if we don't have it, I mean, it's a 20% decline in our economy, in our a small community like us. And it's also our heritage and our history. You know, you hear some a lot of talk from different organizations that are out there, or the groups, on how much money they spend in Waukegan County or Pacific County or these counties on the coast. Those people are there for a short period of time and they leave. They're not there. They don't live there. They don't pay taxes. If this ballot goes through and we lose this commercial fishing industry, it's going to be a hit, a big hit for our local communities. And I'm here to just say that what Mr. Kitzhopper in Oregon has proposed is really not looking at the long term effect that it's really going to have on some of the smaller communities in Oregon and Washington. We live there. We coexist with the commercial industry and the sports industry, and we've done that for years, and we'll continue to do that. What I see with this whole situation is greed. The greed that I see on the other end of the sports industry, and I'm a sports fisherman, but I'll tell you, the greed there on how many fish do these people actually need? I mean, we go out and catch fish in the small communities. We get enough for what we can eat and stuff. And, it's a sport, but it's also, you know, to feed, you know, give our families a taste of some fish. But some of our people in our communities aren't able to do that. And they depend on these commercial people to be able to go out and get that fish and for them to buy. Sometimes I have to buy a fish. I don't have the time to fish. I try to, but, you know, a lot of us don't have that opportunity. In a small rural community, you have two jobs. I'm a commissioner. I'm also, I work for the timber industry. The same as with the commercial industry. Those people have two or three different jobs in different places. That's what rural is all about. And what this whole thing is bottled down to is urban against rural. And at this point, I mean, I've been fighting this for years. I'm really tired of it. I mean, I come up here and I listen to a lot of this testimony from these fishing groups. And I'm telling you, they don't have the facts and they don't have the knowledge of what it entails in this fishing industry. There's been mistakes on the fishery end of this, on how they've dealt with fish in our rivers, and now we're back to making a full circle with what's been done in the past with the biologist, you know, that worked this. And I think with a lot of this stuff, the knowledge that the commercial fishing industry people have on some of the older people is a tremendous amount of knowledge to pass this on. And thank you.
Thank you. Before you leave, Commissioner Duvier.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Dan, this is a different side, but I think in that corner down there, we've been having a problem with elk having a foot problem.
Yes.
And so we've been on that, and I think we're just in the process of setting up some seminars to try to educate the people and get some assistance on how severe that problem is and how we can combat it. So you in the forest industry, I guess, are you seeing that problem expanding, or is it stabilizing, or
it's expanding? We're getting it even in the high country now. You know, we're not very high, but we're getting it up in the upper levels. Some of your valleys, we really got devastated in the Skamakaway Valley here about 5-6 years ago, and that herd is slowly coming back. But then you go to another valley, and out of 20 head, you might have 7 or 8 of them that has a swift rod. And pretty quick, there was actually a ridge down there that I've hunted through, and there's nothing but carcasses on it. I've talked to our legislative people. They really don't seem that you know, it's going to go, you know, go through a phase and be done. I don't see that. This is scary from what we're seeing in the rural communities and dealing with this, because we live it every day. We see it. People from the valleys, we're hoping to have plenty of people come to the forum that you've got. And we'd be able to speak a little bit more on that. I know we're pressed for time, but thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay, Diane Gallegos. Is that pronounced? Oops. Very good.
Hi, good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commission members, and Department staff. I'm Diane Gallegos, Executive Director at Wolf Haven International. Washington Conservation Groups will be sending a letter to the Commission members and Department staff, but I wanted to publicly reaffirm that we support the adopted Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. The plan states that lethal removal may be used to stop repeated depredation when the following criteria are met: that it's documented that livestock have clearly been killed by wolves, non-lethal methods have been tried but failed, depredations are likely to continue, or there's no evidence that intentional feeding or unnatural attraction of wolves by the livestock owners. We look forward to continuing dialogue with the department related to processes being used for determining when these criteria have been met. We appreciate all the time the department has given us for that dialogue, and we look forward to more of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Liz Hamilton.
Good afternoon, Chair Wecker, Commissioners, Director Anderson. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to be very brief. I just want to say, first of all, thank you for embarking upon this process. I know some might think that 3 months is short, but most or many of the commissioners have been through a process before on this issue. Staff gave what was an exceptional briefing, I think it was a month ago. There's some good staff work being done here. And there's lots of good news. I think the fact that what Oregon is proposing, or what has come out of the Oregon Governor's office, actually looks very much like what this commission supported years ago with the Oregon Commission. And it didn't come to pass, but at least the issue has been vetted and discussed in the past. The other good news is that Oregon did follow through on some of the agreement and transferred over 250,000 spring Chinook smolts into the safe areas afterwards. So while they didn't follow through on the whole agreement, they did follow through on some parts of it. And the other good news is that also since that time, there's been something about 7 million increase in smolts into the safe area. So we have been proactively moving these fish into an area where they can be selectively harvested. There's a lot more work on what we need to do to expand selective harvest in the river, but it's exciting to have this discussion, exciting to have an opportunity to put it to rest so that we can all put our resources to other other uses, get our communities back invested in each other and each other's future. And we're very excited about that and very grateful for you for taking this on. So that's all I have for today. Thank you. Any questions? I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the open public input. We're ahead of schedule, so let's come back at 3:15, and we'll move on to item 4 then. Thank you.